Welcome to Versus History with Elliot Watson and Patrick O'Shaughnessy.
Good afternoon and welcome to Versus History. I am Dr. Elliot L. Watson, and with me is a very special guest, Mr. Sam Lee. Now, before I introduce him, we are currently sitting in his beautiful garden in Bristol. It is sunny and the weather is gorgeous and it's a little bit hot, but you may hear some ambient noises as we're talking. Just try and either ignore them or enjoy them. Now, Sam, welcome to Versus History.
Thank you very much.
Now, Sam, today you're going to talk to us about a particular area of interest of yours, which is what?
The Football Association.
The Football Association. Right, the first question, the natural question here is going to be, what is that?
So the Football Association is the governing body, the association which organises football in England.
Right, okay. Can you explain, so you've told us literally what that is, but can you explain why you're particularly interested in the FA?
Well, I think my interest is less in the FA per se than it is in football.
And right.
When I'm saying football, I mean, you know, I know you've got some listeners in America and places like that. We're talking soccer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Not rugby, not American not football.
Not rugby, not American football, soccer, which most of the world is called football.
Right.
And I'm interested in football, and the Football Association is where football started in 1863.
Right. So in England?
In England. England is where football began, and it was the Football Association which created it, and they created it in a pub called the Freemasons Arms in Covent Garden in London. And there was a group of wealthy men, upper-class men, kind of public school boys, who got together and they decided, look, lots of people are playing football across the country.
Yeah.
But they've all got different rules. And it's a bit annoying because, you know, they were coming from their public schools. By public schools, we mean these kind of very posh private schools, your Eatons, your Harrows. And they were all playing slightly different variations of the game. They would go off to university, usually, to Cambridge University, Oxford University, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And they would try and play against people that they meet at university. And it'd get annoying because they'd all have different rules. And so they got together and said, well, this is ridiculous. We've got to have a codified set of rules. And that's what happened in this pub in London in 1863.
What was the name of the pub again?
It's called the Freemasons Arms, and it's still there. It's on, I believe it's on Longacre, but it's in Covent Garden. It's
okay.
A traditional English pub, and it's got various paraphernalia and photos about this kind of historic event which happened there.
So football is traditionally seen as or it's associated with drinking in pubs,
yeah.
And it's apposite that's where the FA starts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very appropriate place for football to begin.
Right. Now, you've mentioned that it was, or not mentioned, you've stated, you've told me that it was created by public school boys, public school boys slash men. My view of football, and I'm an avid football fan as well, I'm a long-suffering Newcastle fan, my view is that it's a working-class sport. So how do we end up it being created, the FA, the rules, the system, how do we end up it, the genesis being of an elitist organisation or institution to the sport that we see today, which is very much, I would say, a working-class sport?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. I think the change happens quite quickly. I mean, unsurprisingly, you've got these upper-class boys who are used to used to organising things, used to leading things, and so they come together and form it. But it's not to say that working-class people weren't playing their own variations of the game. So
uh-huh.
Football existed as kind of folk football and played with pig's bladders and whatnot, not just in England, but in various other parts of the world. So the working class carried on playing it, but now there was a codified set of rules. They began to play by this codified set of rules.
Right.
And the kind of the change to working class participation and dominance of the sport happens quite quickly. Most football clubs either started with a kind of a local church,
uh-huh.
kind of a social club of the day, or quite commonly through a workplace. So Manchester United, for example, started as Newton Heath, and they were railway workers from Lancashire and Yorkshire, quite working class areas.
Right.
Arsenal, for example, started as munitions workers, and they began to form their own clubs. And by 1883, I would say that's quite a seminal date, because that's where you get a working class team, Blackburn Olympic, who become Blackburn Rovers. They beat the Old Etonians
right.
in the FA Cup final of 1883. And this is kind of a seminal moment where you think, the working class dominate this game now.
So that's the moment we would say that we see this transition from public elitist organisation to what we see.
Yeah, here. Absolutely. And I think another big change in that was the public school boys, there was kind of a spirit of amateurism, and it was almost seen as a little bit crass to be paid for, to be played for paying sport.
Right.
Playing sport. Another key date, another big date, is when they start to allow professionalism and allow to be paid. You can pay people to play for your club.
When was that?
That was 1885. So it's
as early as 1885?
Yes, so it's all starting to happen very quickly, kind of in the 1880s, and this is where you start to get much more, you know, and as a working class person, you can then be paid for it, so you don't have to worry about putting food on your table.
Right. And all of these clubs that grew up, like Blackburn, did you say Blackburn Heath? Was it originally?
They were Blackburn Olympic, I believe, and become Blackburn Rovers.
So yeah. these all... grew as a result of, or rather they were marshalled, and they were allowed to pay their players because of the FA? Is that?
Yeah, the FA grappled with it for a few years about whether we're going to allow this within our new kind of codified system of the game. And then they allowed it. They decided it's going to happen anyway. Mm. It's starting to happen with little bonuses for playing. And so they made it official in 1885.
Okay. Now, other than the importance, obviously, of the FA in the development of the sport, is there any? Does it have any impact? The creation of the FA or the evolution of football? Does it have any impact other than simply and specifically sport related?
It depends who you talk to, but I would argue that it is. Not significant in itself, but it's part of a larger trend which is happening around the same time, late 19th century, where you get a big movement towards nation states as a kind of a personal identity, and people become much more patriotic and feel themselves as part of an imagined community of a nation.
Uh-huh.
And this is coming through organisations such as this, which are operating on a national level. I mean, the railways have starting to come about as popular mass movement, so people can move around the country more easily.
Uh-huh.
And so as a result of that, you've kind of got organisations like the Football Association springing up, trade unions are beginning to operate on a kind of a national level, professional associations on a national level. But you also see at a government level, they're beginning to say, hang on, we take more responsibility for this area which we govern, this kind of national identity, this national area. And so at the same time, you start to see big movements like in 1880, there is compulsory education in England for the first time, whereas previously we didn't care about educating our people. 1875, you've got the Public Health Act, which the government takes responsibility for ensuring that there's good public health, clean running water, clean running streets, whereas previously... not the government's responsibility, who cares? And in Germany at the same time as well, I mean, just to kind of stretch the point, they start to have social security systems developing, which then starts to happen towards the end of the 19th century and early 20th century. And I think in lots of countries in Europe, particularly in England and Britain, you start to get a movement towards a cohesive national identity, much more examples of fervent patriotism. And this, I would argue, kind of leads into some of the national wars that you get at the start of the 20th century, notably World War I and, uh-huh. and World War II. And so, I mean, to say the Football Association is responsible for that, clearly not. But the Football Association is part of a growing trend of movements towards national bodies national laws, which have been created at the end of the 19th century as kind of patriotism and national identity becomes a bigger theme in world history.
Does that mean the FA is a government organisation?
No, it's not. It's separate from government. It's an organisation which has taken it upon itself to codify the rules of the game and then becomes a non-governmental.
Okay, so the current FA chief is a guy called... Is it Greg Dyke?
It's Greg Dyke at the moment. The FA today is a diminished organisation in lots of ways because with the Premier League coming along,
uh-huh.
the top Premier League clubs no longer a part of, they're no longer under the jurisdiction of the Football Association, if you want. The Football Association works with the Premier League, but the Football Association are only in charge of the divisions below the Premier League, which is the Football League, the Championship, Division 1, Division 2.
I did not know that.
And they have been in charge of the Football League since they, not long after their creation, they created the Football League in 1888, largely, to return to our previous theme, of working, well, not largely, completely, of working class clubs from the West Midlands and kind of Lancashire. Preston North End, Villa, Stoke, Blackburn, Bolton were all kind of founder members of the Football League.
Uh-huh.
And that was the league in England, which existed until 1992, when basically the Premier League clubs, as they became, decided we can get a bit more money if we break away from the Football League and organise ourselves in our own little league. So they are, they're actually officially separate from the Football League. And so the FA doesn't have control over the Premier League anymore. They have control over the England national team and the Football League, which feeds into the Premier League, but they're separate from the Premier League.
Is there a Scottish FA and a Welsh FA?
Yeah, well, this, the interesting thing about the FA, I mean, it sounds like I'm being, your typical slightly chauvinistic Englishman. Like, oh, we're the FA. Uh-huh. We're not the English FA, we're the FA. But the FA is the only one in the world which doesn't have a prefix of England, Scotland, France, Germany, whatever. It's just the FA, because England being the centre of a huge empire in the late 19th century, they then spread these codified rules around the world, and other countries adopted those rules along the same lines.
So would we fully expect to see, let's say in former colonies, would we fully expect to see the rules or the codification in place by the FA? We'd expect to see similar rules all around the country.
Absolutely. So when England fans sing "Football's Coming Home," I mean, that is a kind of an allusion to the fact that football was, in its current state, created in England in 1863 with the Football Association, and then when Sri Lanka, for example, they set up the Sri Lankan Football Association using the same rules. Say for Germany, they set up the German Football Association, and that's how football came about in its present form. I mean, you must stress, as lots of people do, that people have kicked balls around, pig's bladders and whatever, way back into history. So people have always kicked balls around, but this was the codification of the game with the rules in basically its current form, with a few kind of add-ons since.
Now, that's interesting that you've just said that, because that leads me on to the next point, that you've said that the rules, the codes, are generally in the same form. Are there any developments across the, what is it now, 120 years, 130 years or so of the FA being around? Are there any developments in that period of time where you can look at and you could say, do you know what, that represents some kind of significant turning point in the evolution of the FA or football?
Well, I mean, there's two kind of very different things. I think in terms of the evolution of the FA, there's big things happen straight away. So 1872, they start the FA Cup, which is the oldest knockout competition in the world in any sport.
Right, wow, okay.
Certainly in football. And the FA Cup, which anyone who doesn't know, is a national knockout competition where the likes of Manchester United, a huge team, can be drawn out of a hat against someone small and tiny, Blythe Spartans, and they can play each other, and it can be a complete mismatch. And the beauty of the FA Cup is sometimes you get minnows knocking out kind of giants of football. But that started in 1872, and I'd say that's a huge development. In the same year, you had England versus Scotland, the first international game.
England versus Scotland, that was the first
international, international football match. And as I said previously, the formation of the Football League has got to be a big one in 1888.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of instead of just organising games on an ad hoc basis or using the FA Cup, you then set up a league system.
Okay. Now, for anybody who, I'm a big fan of football. I know you're a huge fan of football, obviously. That's why I'm talking to you. And the history of football, you're a Fulham fan, so you must be very happy about their progress.
Yeah, for once in my history, I'm actually quite happy to be a Fulham fan. Usually it's just, perennial heartache.
So anybody that is not necessarily as an avid a supporter as yourself of football, what could you, if you had to point to one thing or you could point them in one direction to stimulate an interest in either football or the FA, to which area might you point them and say, look, that's proof that it's exciting and interesting and you should go and have a look further at this?
Well, I to be honest, we're sitting here in the summer of 2018, golden summer, but it was also golden summer because it was a World Cup year, and I think it's the World Cup. I mean, I was a 6-year-old during the 86 World Cup, and that first tied me into the game.
Hmm.
And I suppose you're asking what are the big seminal moments. I think the formation of the World Cup, which is an, you know, I think we're all aware of it, kind of this international competition between different countries where different countries compete instead of having wars. we now play against each other in football, and that started in 1930.
Yeah, we didn't have a war. We've not had a war since then, right? Well,
yeah, that theory doesn't totally stand up. But you know, it's that I think is a huge development, and I think it's very clear that England, although they've started the game, they are no longer anywhere near the dominating force, which they kind of would have been in the 19th century if they began it. I mean, and the big countries have been places like, you know, Brazil have been traditionally very good, Germany, France. Mm. And so I think if you're trying to get into football, the World Cup, which comes around every 4 years, is your big one.
It's the place to start. I've got two more questions very quickly. This is a personal question. Recently, the FIFA as well as the FA have adopted VAR, virtual assistant refereeing. This is where the referee can essentially call a timeout, you can go to the sidelines and review video evidence of fouls and incidents and then judge them. What is your personal opinion about VAR?
I think I'm in a minority on this. I wouldn't take this as kind of a gospel opinion that all football fans are holding. I'm coming down more on the side of against VAR.
Right.
On the basis that I think part of the popularity of football has become the world sport is that the fact that deep down, football fans quite like injustice. They quite like decisions going against them. They quite like kind of the theatre of football.
Right.
And I think VAR just makes it a bit kind of clinical
and
takes that aspect out of it. Although I concede I've spoken to lots of other football fans who are big kind of fans of it and think it's good for the game.
Okay. Right. One last thing before we wrap this up. Co-editor of Versus History, Patrick, is a massive Spurs fan. And you're a Fulham fan.
Yeah.
Is there anything you would like to say or can say to him about his football team and their chances next year?
Well, I mean, you've put me in a difficult situation here because, you know, as a Fulham fan, I'm basically, you know, without ammunition if I'm taking on a Spurs fan. I mean, they're kind of a giant of the game, whereas Fulham couldn't possibly claim to be that. Although we are playing them on the second game of the season. I think Spurs' last game at Wembley, which they've been playing in over the last year or two whilst their ground's been redeveloped. And the great thing of being at sporting a small club is you can go to somewhere like Tottenham expecting nothing, and all of the onus is on him and his club to get a victory. You don't beat Fulham at home, you're in for a bad season. Watch your back, I guess is the message.
Any tips for Newcastle this year?
Just try not to be as boring and rubbish as you usually are.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Sam Lee, thank you very much for being our guest today and talking to us thoroughly about the FA and the history of the FA in football. It's been an absolute pleasure. This is Dr. Elliot L. Watson signing out, and thank you very much, Sam Lee.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for downloading and listening to this edition of Versus History. Subscribe, visit us at our website, www.versushistory.com.